You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at ReadyMadeResources.com.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
Hi, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Washington State Representative Matt Shea. Enjoy the show. In these types of revolutions, where particularly communist revolutions, groups like Antifa have historically been made up with sort of ne'er-do-wells who don't have much of an affinity for hard work, which is why they've got so much time on their hand for protesting. And as such, they require the wealth of and prosperity of a working class to survive. If they take down the current system that sustains them through welfare programs, they'll have no other alternative but to steal and to take from folks like ourselves.
Well, there's an interesting statistic that's tracked here in the United States of America. The Federal Reserve tracks this, and it's the inactivity rate of males between the ages of 24 and I believe it's 65 or 54 maybe, but you get the idea. And people that are students of history understand that when the inactivity rate of males between those ages gets over 10%, you start to have civil unrest. And it has been at over 10% here now for a couple of years, and that corresponds very interestingly to all the civil unrest. And you're right, they won't have anything else to do. They're depending on government largesse, bureaucrats in government, to continue to give them checks. And you know, if that goes away, or they just really feel like they don't have any other choice because this is their lifestyle that they're choosing, and they can't see it any other way, then yes, that's what's going to happen. They're going to have nothing else to do but join these types of movements. And it's interesting as well that this follows a similar pattern in the former Soviet Union, where they released prisoners, people that have had no morals, that they're sociopaths, to help in the movement in the former Soviet Union. And that was one of the reasons all of the business owners and what they call the kulaki, the people that are the productive members of society, were targeted and removed. And the people that did it were these folks that literally had no morals and no grounding. And so communists generally seek those people out because they are willing to follow orders like that. And they feel also they have a chip on their shoulder that it's now time to get mine, as it were.
Do you worry that the right is far less organized than the left and perhaps less ready for a conflict?
The right is far more organized than the left even understands. And at least in areas like the Readout, have done so very quietly and have done so out of the public spotlight. And that's probably all I would like to say on that. But they're far more organized than people would know. And I would also say, too, that the Constitution and the belief systems of Jesus Christ and believing in Jesus Christ and accepting him as your Lord and Savior, that naturally helps to organize you when you focus on the Lord, because the Lord will prepare you for situations ahead of time. And I think that the right, as it were, I would just like to characterize, I guess, as Christian patriots are ready, at least in this area, for what is about to happen. Now, does that mean everybody's ready? No, absolutely not. Could we be more ready? Absolutely we could. But people are starting to wake up. I've seen more prayer in the last year in the political arena than I have ever seen in my entire time as an elected representative. And I think it's important to understand the fact that along with prayer, God will spur you to action. And that's what we're seeing happen right now.
And after such a conflict, do you think that America would come to some type of a two-state solution, or do you think that we would see multiple city-states, sort of like what you were talking about with California, where there was, you know, maybe five or six different entities after the smoke cleared?
I believe it was Isaac Panarov who was a former Izvestia agent and became a professor in the former Soviet Union, who talked about kind of the Balkanization of the United States and predicted kind of that breakup into, I think, either six or seven separate countries. Other people have predicted that's what will happen. I think that it could happen that way around those regions of freedom that I talked about earlier. You don't know, though. You have, you know, that would be a complete guess, but more likely than not, it probably would be some sort of Balkanization, because those regions of freedom are already naturally forming right now. And there's a very big divide between urban and rural. And so you'll have very largely urban areas naturally banding together. You see this around the world. I know Matt Bracken has talked about it as well, but you see it around the world in different places. I saw it in Iraq, and it's actually coming to fruition here. September 25th, I think the Kurds are voting for independence in northern Iraq. But you're seeing it there because those people groups banded together naturally. The Kurds, who are Sunni, banded together. This is the former area of the Medo-Persian Empire, but particularly the Mede Empire. And then you have in southern Iraq the division between Sunni and Shia down there, and those people groups naturally banded together and created their own regions, and now those regions look like they're trying to establish their own independence. So you see it in other places in the world. That's probably the more likely scenario of what happens in the United States, but that would be mitigated if there was a massive catastrophe that sort of Balkanization wasn't even possible here. So it just, I guess, would depend, but very likely that's where it's headed. And again, based along those lines, those regions of freedom and the Appalachians, the Redoubt, some might say northern Maine also, and then Texas, Oklahoma.
What about the rest of the world? What type of involvement would you expect from neighboring countries like Mexico and Canada if we had an internal conflict?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, I've talked to people who say that, you know, there would be an attempt to reclaim some of the territory in the southern United States. Largely the Canadians, I think, would stay out of it. And I've talked to folks in Canada, you know, from Alberta, particularly the central part of Canada, that have said, hey, you know, if something happened down in the United States, why would we want to get involved? We're doing great up here, you know, out in the wilderness. We're not going to get involved in something like that. But I think that there are some, particularly in the southern United States and also in Mexico, that might believe this would be an opportunity to try to reclaim some territory, so they might act on something like that. But again, that's speculation, and it would depend on the size of movements. But there are some people that have made some pretty clear statements, like La Raza, that they would want that type of a reclaiming of that territory.
Do you think you'd see groups like La Raza banding together with Antifa and BLM? Of course, we saw Antifa and the BLM standing arm to arm in the previous protests in Charlottesville.
Sure, absolutely. They're already doing it. I mean, Indivisible is connected with the Peace Justice Action League here in Spokane, with the Spokane essentially chapter of Antifa. And then they have this thing called Redneck Revolt. There's an important thing to understand about Redneck Revolt, too. They show up with weapons at some of these rallies, and if you look close enough, you'll see that some of these weapons are actually airsoft guns. But the important point to understand there, people ask, well, why is the left showing up with weapons? Well, one of the reasons they're doing it is to give the mayors or elected officials that are on the left in those areas the ability to just say, hey, we're going to ban all guns, because the left is bringing them too. It's not just picking on the right. We're going to ban all guns across the spectrum because the left is bringing them too. So you understand that sometimes they do that as well. But back to your original point, they are working together. It's happening. It's already connected. They are very well connected through their networks, and their networks generally lead back to one George Soros, as you well know.
And I was wondering if there was any link between Soros and because we've seen a lot of the Antifa members that are pretty well kitted out, and whether it's airsoft or not, a lot of them have got some pretty high end load bearing equipment and high end weaponry and stuff that I would think it would be pretty hard to purchase on a Starbucks paycheck or a welfare check.
Well, one of the key things for your listeners to observe is, does the equipment all look the same? And when I was watching some of the videos, some of their equipment was identical, which tells me that they bought it in bulk or in mass, or were supplied it, as we're just talking about, in bulk or in mass. And so I think it's a very high likelihood that they're being funded exactly for that reason. So then if that's the case, and it could ever be proven that George Soros was arming the left in the United States, I think that would be enough to at least try to prosecute him.
Yeah, there was enough stuff to try to prosecute Hillary too, but I guess that never happened.
Exactly.
They seem to operate with a different set of rules. And what about the UN? They have quite a precedent for meddling in such affairs. What role do you think they'd play in a U.S. civil war?
Well, you have this treaty against genocide that was brought into being a long time ago. Many people don't even know it exists. And it was interesting, a couple of weeks ago, the United Nations kind of took an extraordinary step and warned the United States as far as the way it treated minority populations here, along the lines of saying that could lead to genocide. Now, they had not warned, other than really third world, some might argue second world countries around the globe, about this in the past. And so it's interesting that they took that step to warn the United States. A lot of people don't know is that can actually allow the United Nations to physically deploy troops into the United States of America if that treaty is invoked. And the fact that they gave us a warning, at least in my mind, seems to point in the direction that they may think that that's a possibility for them in the future. So people say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. Look, the treaty's in writing. You can go read it. You can go read the articles on the warning that was just issued here, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago, and look at it for yourself. And the implications are fairly startling that they would do that right now. If I would say this, though, if the United Nations ever did something like that, I think there would be such a backlash from the American people, they would wish they never had.
And people also thought the idea of FEMA camps was a conspiracy theory as well. But after Hurricane Harvey, we saw people flooding into the Houston Convention Center and willingly allowing themselves to be frisked and search for any type of weapons and having every one of their constitutional freedoms checked at the door while they were basically stuck into general population, where you've got now completely, totally unarmed women in a general population type setting, like a prison cell, with people that are potentially hardened criminals that could take them to the bathroom and do whatever they wanted to do with no risk of repercussion, because they know that their victim has been disarmed at the door. And we saw very similar things with people lined up to go to refugee centers when Hurricane Irma was coming through in Fort Myers, and people just lined up in droves, so willing to check their rights and trade their freedoms for security.
Well, and this is where, you know, I talked about how we, you know, disagree with one another. And I don't disagree with you. But when I lay out what I'm about to lay out, these are primary sources. And FEMA camps as such do exist. In fact, there's something called the National Shelter System, the National Shelter Database, that literally has a list of all the potential places people could be sheltered in and refugee camps could be created. So when people say FEMA camps don't exist, it's just not true. It's just not true that the National Shelter Database is in existence. It's there. Those places have been identified. Now, some of those places have been identified are not necessarily habitable, but they're on this list. So they're designated emergency relocation shelters and centers and mass evacuation centers. Those exist, and they're put into use quite routinely when there is a natural disaster. Red Cross knows where these are, and FEMA knows exactly where these are. So the idea that, you know, that's some kind of a conspiracy theory, it's just patently false, and nobody can rebut what I just said or refute what I just said. Could those then be used for nefarious purposes later? Sure. And that's why I think we need to be ever vigilant in defense of our freedoms and liberties.
Do you think China and Russia would want to get in on the act if there was a U.S. civil war?
Oh, sure. They're already in on the act. I mean, my goodness, the Russians are very adept and have always been very adept. You have a former KGB man that's in charge of Russia. They're very adept at disinformation. In fact, there's a great book written on disinformation by General Ion Mihai Pachipa. General Pachipa was the highest ranking KGB officer to defect to the United States of America. And in his book, Disinformation, he lays out what these guys have done. I mean, they sent 4,000 KGB agents into the Middle East to infiltrate in the Middle East. He talks about how disinformation is used to create a false right, a false narrative on the right to battle with the narrative on the left. Talks about the fact that, you know, when you have the opportunity, you can infiltrate and create and foment divisions inside of a country. So very clearly, the Russians are already interested in the United States being weaker, and so are the Chinese. They're very interested in doing that. So I don't have any question that they'll be able to weigh in. What I would say, though, is the Chinese right now do not have a large enough blue water navy to really project force or power as such. I think a lot of things would be done maybe on the covert side of things.
You've sponsored a bill in Washington, HB 1649, I believe it is, sort of a right to life bill. Is that getting any traction?
Yeah, it actually is getting traction. Again, you know, I talked about the fact we tied 48-48 to defund abortion in Washington state. We're very close to, you know, getting enough votes to make that a reality and get it through committee as well if we take a majority. So yeah, it's gaining a lot of traction. And for your listeners, a lot of people don't know, Washington state legalized abortion before Roe versus Wade, to our great shame. And I think it would be great if Washington state led the resurgence of defunding organizations like Planned Parenthood and actually protecting innocent life.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, campingsurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at campingsurvival.com. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. The U.S. House has a similar bill. It's a H.R. 586, and to my knowledge, it's making no progress at all. Can you explain to us how a bill goes from being introduced to being voted on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have in Washington state, it goes to a committee. Now, the committee chairman can kill any bill. A lot of people don't know that. They have a lot of power. So a bill will go to the committee chairman, and the committee chairman can decide to give it a hearing or not. If the committee chairman doesn't give it a hearing, bill's dead. If they do give it a hearing, then after the hearing, they have to vote it out of committee. That's also where the committee chairman can kill the bill. It is then voted out of committee, and it will go to the rules committee, and it will be deliberated on in the rules committee and voted out of rules to the floor of the House for a full vote of the House, and then it goes back through the same process in the Senate. Along that entire process, amendments can be offered to the bill, and a lot of times it's going to be political. For one reason or another, sometimes it's for true clarification, and that's good, but a lot of times it's political, and there is some political interest in the bill that needs to be addressed, and that's where the closed door meetings happen, and people are wondering, how is it possible that, you know, the Republicans that have a majority in Congress can't get a pro-life bill through? It's because they don't want to upset other members for political reasons that some of those things don't get through.
And is in the federal level, does it operate similar to the way that it does in Washington state?
It does. I mean, the rules are a little bit more difficult and complicated, but than Washington's are. But As far as the not wanting to offend perhaps the more moderate wing of the party, that is absolutely true. And that explains probably why a lot of those bills don't move forward.
But when you have a Republican-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate and a Republican-controlled Oval Office, and we see a bill like 586 that gets no traction whatsoever, how is that possible? I mean, because it seems to me that no one would be upset in out of those three components to have such a bill if they're truly as pro-life as they profess to be.
Well, there's a couple of things that I say to people when they ask me about things like that. And the first is, if you think you know a politician, you don't. You don't. And you can't listen to words. You need to look at actions. And, you know, this, again, is not about maybe right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about being an American or not. And you either do what you say you believe or you don't. And so when you see people make whatever excuse they're making not to do what they say they believe, you know what side of the coin they're on. And you will have people for political reasons vote to, for example, repeal Obamacare. You know, 5 or 6 times they'll vote to repeal Obamacare. But when it really comes down to the repeal becoming reality, suddenly they waffle. And they go the other way. And they'll have all kinds of reasons. And some of those reasons will sound magnificent. But the fact of the matter is, they're not doing what they said they were going to do. And the way that you can discern who's who in politics is that when the media viciously attacks somebody, that's usually the person you want to vote for. Usually. That's just kind of a rule of thumb.
And I understand that you would need a supermajority to get something like 586 through the Senate, but Democrats still vote on bills that they know can't pass. Bernie Sanders right now, as we speak, is pushing his Medicare for All Act, and he knows that that doesn't have a snowball's chance in Hades.
Well, you can use bills to educate people. We did that on the NDAA. We used that's the National Defense Authorization Act and the indefinite detention provision of it. We used a bill here in Washington to educate people on the fact that, yes, it was true. Yes, it existed. Yes, there were people very concerned about it, gave very specific examples. So you can use bills to educate people. But also, we need to take a long-term look at things, you know, a 10-year strategy. You introduce the bill every year for 10 years, and part of the initial part of, you know, that time period is to educate people, and then it's to bring people to action. And finally, there's enough of a groundswell, you get the bill passed. So the Democrats are very adept at that. They, you know, same-sex marriage here in Washington State, they introduced, I think, for over 20 years before it finally got passed. And the question is for us, are we going to have that same kind of perseverance, that true, steady perseverance that doesn't just jump into an issue and then go home? As Christians, if we really want to expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ, if we really want to live our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church, we need to be steadily persevering, steadily involved in preaching the gospel, making disciples, showing tangible love to our neighbors if we're actually going to see things change.
And in Luke 21, Jesus speaks about the waves and the sea roaring, and he speaks of those as being a sign of his coming. And we've certainly seen our share of that lately with Harvey and Irma, and as we speak, Maria is approaching Puerto Rico. What are your thoughts on the prophetic timeline of the last days? Do you think these hurricanes could be that sea and waves roaring spoken of by our Messiah?
I've read your book series, so I know what your thoughts are. You do a very good job.
Well, thanks.
Good job laying it out. As a Christian, we're admonished to know the signs of the times, and very clearly we're in the end times. I don't think any true Bible-believing Christian really debates that. So if I know that I'm in the end times, I know that time is short, then my thing is to redouble my efforts to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, make disciples, show tangible love to my neighbor, and be able to preach the gospel and make disciples and show love even in the hardest of times. And that's where preparedness for me comes in. It really is an act of love, being able to, you know, during a disaster or during something else, be able to say, hey, I've got some food for you, and I just want to tell you this is from Jesus, and I want to tell you about him. Those are opportunities that sometimes only come in crisis, and we need to be ready to do those things in crisis. And so, you know, as Christians, that's kind of the way that I look at it. And yes, I think some of these things that are happening could be fulfillment of Scripture. All of that, though, points me back in that same direction of being ready to continue to expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ in these last days.
Representative Shea, we just really want to thank you for your fight for liberty, your service to our country through your time in the armed forces, and your continued service, because I think a fight for liberty anywhere is a fight for liberty everywhere, and you're certainly putting up that fight in Washington. And we want to thank you for your strong witness, and thanks for making time for us today. And can you tell the folks where they can go to follow your work?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you, Mark, for everything that you're doing as well. They can go to VoteShea.com. They can find me there. And I have a list of different things in my social media pages are linked there as well. And then also I do a twice weekly radio show, Patriot Radio. You can check out the podcast at Matt Shea. It's also on iTunes as well. And Patriot Radio is broadcast live from 4 to 5 every Tuesday and Thursday. And then the podcast usually is uploaded by the next morning.
Thanks again for making time for us.
Thank you, Mark. Take care and God bless.
The Days of Elijah, Book 3, Angel of the Abyss, is now available in paperback, Kindle, and audio edition. Everett and Courtney Carroll have endured to the midpoint of the Great Tribulation. The previous seal and trumpet judgments have left the planet in shambles, and the Western Hemisphere is nearly uninhabitable. The prophet Elijah gives Everett a special mission, which will give him a unique role fulfilling end times prophecy. But he'll have to survive the coming cataclysms first. Angelo Luz breaks the treaty he made with the nations, declaring himself to be God. A plague of stinging locusts rises up from the smoke of the bottomless pit, and a 200 million man army of radical jihadists wages a holy war against humanity itself. Everett and Courtney's tribulations thus far have been a walk in the park compared to what's coming. Get your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 3, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin, from Amazon.com today.